We are on a break this week, but with all of the Russia collusion hoax declassification, the following is a smash-up of two of our previous shows exposing the hoax. First up is our show with John Solomon from June 7th, 2020.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Welcome. This is the iSpy Radio Show, where every week we bring you a little more intelligence on big government. We have a great show for you today with award-winning author John Solomon. Today we'll be talking about accountability, especially as seen in the Rod Rosenstein testimony on Wednesday, and what it hints at what might be coming. You know, doing my devotions this morning before the show, I just happened to start the Book of Esther. While a lot of commentators look at Esther's story and see women's rights, or lack thereof, the story begins with holding people accountable. Everyone. Because if you don't, anyone can do anything. The king was giving a huge feast, and he called for his wife to show her off to the nobles from all across the empire. Except, she refused to come. The king's advisor said, get rid of her, thus launching the Babylonian version of The Bachelor and the story of Esther and how she saved the Jews. The queen was among the highest, if not the highest, member of the royal court. By openly defying the king, she was setting a bad example. If the queen herself can ignore the king and nothing happens, then why can't I? If the head of the FBI defies the law and the president, then why can't I? She should have been setting an example. Instead, she defied the king. It's about being punished for wrongdoing, because when those who should be setting an example don't, then an example should be made of them. And that's exactly what should happen to those in the administration. If they can't or won't do their jobs, then they need to be fired, made an example of, and someone better put in their place. But it hasn't happened. No one has been put in jail. No one has so much as even lost their fat government pension after attempting to destroy the country. Yes, Comey was fired, but he got a multi-million dollar book deal and has yet to be charged with a crime, despite an attempted insurrection against an elected president, or Brennan, or Clapper. No one, so far, has been held truly accountable. I'd like to welcome now John Solomon. He's an award-winning investigative journalist, author, and CEO and editor-in-chief of Just the News. You can find that at simplyjustthenews.com. He's also co-author with Seamus Bruner of Fallout, Nuclear Bribes, Russian Spies, and Washington Lies That Enriched the Clintons and Biden Dynasties. John, welcome to the show.
It is good to be with you.
Oh, it sure is good to have you. We've got 1,000 questions here, but we want to mainly focus on the Lindsey Graham and Rod Rosenstein hearings that just happened on Wednesday. The first thing that jumped out at me on that was, why did it take Lindsey Graham so long to hold these hearings?
Yeah, it's a great question, right? Certainly after the Mueller. So the first excuse was, we're not going to interfere while Mueller is done. Then Mueller was done in April of last year. Then it was, we're not going to interfere with the IG report. And the IG report came out in December. Then it was, we're not going to interfere with the declassification process. Then all the documents got declassified. And so I think eventually Lindsey Graham ran out of reasons to not do it. And he held a very important hearing. I mean, I think yesterday we learned an awful lot. And it encircles the FBI now, because the man who supervised the investigation suggests the FBI misled him. The IG says the FBI was misleading on multiple accounts. So you're beginning to get a noose tightened around the leadership of the Comey, McCabe, Ray FBI. And you're beginning to see that at least the bad conduct is pretty clearly in agreement now. The Democrats couldn't offer very much defense yesterday because the evidence is overwhelming. The FBI misled courts, misled the American people, and kept a false investigation going for 3 years.
Oh, absolutely. And in terms of the Democrats, they really didn't have very much. There's a lot of softball questions. They kept trying to distract with the COVID-19 and all of this sort of things. But
right.
They kept repeating, you know, here they are at a hearing investigating why this thing all happened, and yet they're still trotting out the Russian collusion theories. Did that surprise you that that's where they keep going when they know that it's false?
Where they really tried to go is, okay, maybe you didn't get Trump, but The Russians did interfere in the election. Okay, well, they've interfered in every election since the 80s and 90s, and everyone's in agreement on that. So the question here, if the Russians had interfered and Trump wasn't involved, there wouldn't have been all of the harm to the Trump administration that occurred. It was the collusion narrative, the false collusion narrative, the now completely disproven narrative that hampered the Trump administration for 3 years. And there was a moment, I think it was Meiji Hirono from Hawaii said, well, Mr. Rosenstein, don't you believe that there might have been some criminality? And Rosenstein came back and said, no, I'm sorry, I don't think the president committed any crimes that we could prosecute. So they ruled out, and they were kind of hoping maybe he would split the apple and say, well, there was some hint of criminality and we just didn't pursue it. He said, no crimes, nothing to prosecute. And I think that was, you know, a tough moment for the Dems. They had to swallow their own medicine.
Well, it was certainly a tough moment for her. I mean, I've never seen anyone work so hard to get the answer that she wasn't getting.
She died her darndest.
Yeah. Well, and it clearly ran against her entire version of reality. It was really something to see. I mean, it's like she'd never even heard anything outside those talking points.
Yep. Well, that's how, you know, those who've been watching MSNBC and who've been living in the conspiracy still believe it, because they haven't taken the time to read the facts. And
no.
If these facts were used against a Democratic president, Democratic lawmakers would be aghast. Mm. But they haven't, and they haven't come to grips with their own culpability. People like Adam Schiff and Mark Warner drove this theory for 3 years, and at some point the public will have to hold them accountable.
Oh, I would certainly hope so. Let's go ahead and take a break. Don't go anywhere. There is tons more coming up with John Solomon as we break down the Rod Rosenstein hearing and expose what it means for some investigations already afoot. You're listening to a Best of iSpy. This is from June of 2020. We're talking today to award-winning journalist John Solomon. You've heard him on Hannity, Fox News, and of course right here on iSpy Radio. So in terms of that hearing, was there anything that jumped out at you that made you say, wow, this is totally new? We didn't know this before.
Yeah, nothing other than I think it was important that the man who oversaw the investigation acknowledge what those of us who've reported, or you know, those who've investigated in Congress or those in the IG's office already found, which is by August of 2017, a month or two into Mueller's investigation, the Justice Department knew there was no collusion. And yet for another 19 months, they allowed the investigation to go on without giving the president a clean bill of health. And I think that is, while now well known, to hear it from the man who supervised it was very powerful. And two, it really begs the question, and it goes to show that there was a permanent bureaucracy that didn't want to give Donald Trump that moment, that wanted to extend the pain of the moment, even though the right thing to do would have been to come out with that conclusion. And so that was a very big headline. The fact that Rod Rosenstein said today I wouldn't sign the FISA warrant if I knew then what I knew today, that was a very big moment. And I think the very strong hints that in Rod Rosenstein's mind, the man who helped concoct the conspiracy or keep it going, at least, was Andy McCabe. A lot of pushing back on Andy McCabe. There were two moments where I thought Rod Rosenstein really dug into him. And one was when he said, the reason I pointed Mueller because I didn't trust the acting FBI director, a la Andy McCabe, to do it right. And two, Andy McCabe wasn't candid with me. And that, you know, I think he put the blame of all the information Rod Rosenstein didn't claim to know at Andy McCabe's feet. And that's what the IG did too. And I think we're starting to get a picture that if there was a quarterback of this whole FBI mess, Andy McCabe might have been wearing the signal caller uniform.
So that kind of brings us back around to Rod Rosenstein, who was allegedly in charge of this. And
yes.
It seems like the main takeaway from his testimony was, don't blame me. I took everyone at their word.
Right.
I never bothered to check anything anyone told me, and I did what Mueller told me to do. I mean, that's kind of shocking for somebody that's supposed to be in charge.
Yes, well, Rod Rosenstein is definitely no Harry Truman, because Harry Truman used to say, buck stops with me. No matter where the problem occurred in my chain of command, it stops with me. Rod Rosenstein had no bucks and no me in it. He just simply wouldn't accept any responsibility for an investigation that he was charged with overseeing. He was the acting attorney general for the purposes of this investigation when Jeff Sessions set aside. So that was a character trait that people will remember about Rod Rosenstein. When he got nervous yesterday, he smiled about things that he shouldn't have been smiling about.
Yeah.
And it led to the great exchange. At one point, Ted Cruz had this amazing exchange, said there's only two possibilities about you, Mr. Rosenstein. Either you were in on the conspiracy, which I don't think is the case, or you completely abdicated your responsibilities. And so they obviously, you could tell what Ted Cruz was saying. You didn't do your job. Hmm. And I think when we look out at how do we get to an FBI that, remember, it wasn't just the Russia FISAs that were all flawed. They did a survey after the Russia case. 29 of 29 FISAs, both on Comey's and Ray's watch, were in violation of FBI laws, contained in FBI regulations. They contained false information. They didn't follow the processes. How can that happen? Well, there's a culture of rubber stamping. No one takes responsibility. Rod Rosenstein was a rubber stamper when the law said he should have been a supervisor. And I think that's what we learned yesterday that should trouble us about the future of civil liberties. There's no leadership in protecting American civil liberties right now.
No, there's not. And as far as the rubber stamping is concerned, I think that's how it is in Washington. I don't think anybody actually reads anything. And it's a little bit of hypocrisy coming from congressmen and senators who we know
yes.
sign bills and vote. Exactly right. Exactly right.
Yeah.
But the reality is, though, is that you've got Rosenstein. He was saying this. He says, I didn't know that there was exculpatory evidence. So,
right.
Okay, why didn't you know? Either he didn't bother to do his job and ask probing questions, or people lied to him. In the former,
right.
he should be fired, and in the latter, others should be fired. Neither one of those happened.
Yep. Yeah, there's very little accountability in Washington, and even in Donald Trump's Washington, where there's lots of machines trying to drain the swamp, the permanent bureaucracy does an incredible job of protecting itself. And it's why when you go out to real America, you get outside of Washington, outside the Beltway, and you talk to people and they say, well, there's two departments. There's a Department of Justice for everyday people, and there's a Department of Just Us for all the insiders who get away with the very crimes and the very misbehavior that we would get charged with. You have Andy McCabe, who has been accused at least in three instances of lying, and he's never been charged. And yet Michael Flynn, who probably didn't lie based on the current evidence out there, gets charged with a crime. And that's where people see a double standard, a hypocritical double standard, and two lanes of justice. And that's not what our founding fathers intended.
Mm-mm, no. And along with his testimony there, he was saying that FBI leaders who do the signing of these warrants, they don't need to read them or verify anything because the people handing it to them are trustworthy. And yet, as you say, 29 applications had problems.
Yeah.
So
that's right.
How can you say
29? I mean, yeah. 100% fault rating. I mean,
yeah.
We'd be flunked out of school if you and I did that.
You would think so, but you know, maybe not anymore. You know, maybe that's the new thing. But again, if you've got 29 of 29, how can you then be thinking that those people are trustworthy? And is anything happening not just in the Carter and Papadopoulos FISA, but I mean, is anything happening to anybody who put anything in front of the FISA court?
Well, there is some significant evidence going on right now that I can see just in my own reporting that the John Durham is in the final phases of what's been a one-year investigation. A lot of people forget he's been going at it for a whole year, very quietly, very nondescript. But I see significant evidence that there's an effort to build one, two, three, maybe four criminal cases that are significant. I would look at the people who are involved in the falsification of a document that tried to hide the fact that Carter Page wasn't a Russian spy. He was a CIA asset spying on Russia for us. I think that's one area of criminality they're looking at. I think they're looking at whether the chain of command in the FBI from top to bottom was engaged in an effort to deceive the FISA court by knowingly and willfully submitting false information. And then I think the third area they're looking at is what is known as the ICA, the Intelligence Community Assessment. And there's one part of it, and most everyone agrees on 80% of the ICA. It's a good product in that respect. But the part that a lot of people, particularly Republicans, are worried about is the conclusion that Putin was specifically trying to help Donald Trump win the election and Hillary Clinton lose the election. That drove the public narrative at the very end of the Obama administration. It was the real knife in Donald Trump's back in the collusion story.
Sure.
And there's now overwhelming evidence that can't be true. Putin was feeding dirt to Christopher Steele to give Hillary Clinton so she could tarnish Donald Trump. You wouldn't be trying to help Donald Trump win if you were equally trying to tarnish him. So that part of the Intelligence Committee assessment, I think, is beginning to fall apart. And the question now is, did John Brennan or someone in the CIA chain of command try to force that conclusion, even though there was a lot of evidence weighing against it? And I think that's the third area. So if those three areas come to pass and John Durham ends up building a criminal case, that will bring some significant accountability. In addition, there is the finishing of some internal affairs investigations. And I would not be surprised if more people are terminated. or disciplined in a very serious way inside the FBI.
That would be great to see. Time for break, though. We'll be right back.
All right. That was John Solomon from June of 2020. We're going to jump forward in the next segment to October of 2020 that exposed without a doubt that the Russia collusion was a hoax, and we learned that from an unexpected source. We're on a break. The following is a best of I Spy from October 2020 when the Russia collusion hoax was exposed without a doubt to be a hoax.
So glad you're joining us today because this is the week the Democrats' coup attempt has been finally exposed at the root. And thanks to none other than former CIA director and permanent scowler, John Brennan. Brennan has provided us the proof we've needed to say conclusively that this entire narrative of Trump was colluding with Russia, pushed by the Democrats and their mainstream media, was entirely fake, a hoax. We'll be interviewing John Solomon in the second half of our show, and what you'll hear today is definitive proof the Russia collusion was a disinformation campaign hatched by Hillary and perpetrated by Democrats in power and an actual coup attempt to overthrow an election. Just think of what the Democrats have put this nation through, the lives they have willingly destroyed, all to get power, and all of it based on disinformation with the aid and help of our own federal agencies. If you remember from past shows, disinformation seeks to create an entirely new reality. It uses a grain of truth and then builds their version of reality around it. Now, grain of truth does not mean that it's true. It's an anchoring point. Obama, the FBI, and all the rest, they heard what Hillary was doing and then proceeded to give her the grain of truth that she needed to construct her false reality. They were investigating Trump. Was he colluding with Russians? No, they knew he wasn't. But the investigation itself creates the grain of truth disinformation requires. Trump must be colluding with Russians because that's why they're investigating. See how that can create the appearance they need to distort what actually happened into the new reality and what they want you to believe. If you're a longtime listener of iSpy Radio, you know that during my graduate programs, I was researching the concept of trust, how to build it, but also how to repair it once it's been broken. During that research, I also became aware that some people would be very interested in my research not to build or repair trust, but to create distrust, to undermine trust. I thought of that a lot doing the prep work for today's show in the sense that it's the same for lawyers. Some go to law school to defend the law. Others use that knowledge to find ways around the law. Hillary, Biden, Obama, James Comey, these were all lawyers. They knew what they were doing was wrong, but using their training, they also worked to find ways around the laws. The loopholes, just enough to break the spirit of the law, but not quite the letter of the law. We'll be talking with John Solomon in the second half of the show, but for now, I'd like to welcome his attorney, or at least one of them from the Southeastern Legal Foundation, Kim Herman. Welcome back.
Thanks. It's great to be with you again.
As I said, we're going to be talking with John about some of the recent revelations in the whole Russia hoax situation there, some of the declassification and whatnot. It's really been fascinating, some of these revelations. So you got the declassified information from DNI John Radcliffe and his note to Lindsey Graham. But then the really big news, I thought, was the John Brennan handwritten notes that this was all clearly was a hoax, beyond a shadow of a doubt. But I'd like to pick your brain as an attorney on all of this. The latest revelations show that Hillary Clinton, on July 26, 2016, allegedly approved of a plan from one of her foreign policy advisors to vilify Donald Trump by stirring up a scandal claiming interference by Russian security services, and was designed to basically provide her some political cover for her own issues around the email server, or her own email, and then also the DNC hack. So let's talk about this. What does this mean for Hillary Clinton and whether it changes anything? After the declassifying of his notes, John Brennan immediately went out on CNN claiming basically, so what? There was nothing illegal about what Hillary did. Is that correct? There's no crime to see here?
Well, I mean, whether or not there's a crime to see, I think is something that we're going to watch play out in honestly, in the courts of public opinion, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I don't foresee her being criminally indicted. I don't foresee a case being brought against her, unfortunately. It doesn't mean that there isn't necessarily a case there. But I think that in the case of Hillary Clinton, as it is typically, as we've seen with the case of Bill Clinton in the past, it's going to be played out in the courts of public opinion. You know, it reminds me back in the day, you know, back in the 90s here at Southeastern Legal Foundation, we filed a bar complaint against President Bill Clinton, because nothing was being done to hold him accountable. And the only lasting impact of his illegal activity back in the 90s and his perjury and his lying under oath and you name it was having to give up his bar license. And so unfortunately, with Hillary Clinton, we can't do that. She knew that that was coming, so she gave it up voluntarily. But, you know, as far as whether or not she'll be indicted and there'll be action brought against her, I would love to see it, as I think would a majority of our country, because what she did was wrong, whether we're talking about with her email server, whether we're talking about smashing phones, destroying evidence, or concocting this ridiculous hoax against President Trump. Time will tell, but I think that also, you know, the election's going to depend on what happens there, because if we have a Biden president, then unfortunately none of these people are probably going to be held accountable, or they will not be held accountable.
I tend to think that that's probably true, especially in the sense that I guess under the First Amendment you can lie all you want. But does it become a crime, though, if they go beyond rumor and innuendo and begin to work with our intelligence agencies to use that smear to investigate Trump and his campaign?
Well, it should be a crime, and there are ways to go about prosecuting. However, again, I just don't think that we're going to see it here. I think that what we're going to see is more of these bad actors getting off scot-free. I think that a lot of that has to do with what ends up being produced publicly, right? So we have this phenomenal order from Donald Trump. He has now twice ordered that all of the Russia documents are declassified and produced. However, even the ones that are being produced, and I know we'll probably get into this some, but we just received documents yesterday that were declassified in response to a FOIA that we have, and they're completely redacted. And so, you know, I don't know if a crime happened. I haven't seen all of the documents. We know, let's take the Bidens, for example. We know that there were alleged crimes that have happened there, right? We know that Joe Biden's son received $3.5 million from a Russian mayor. We know that he received money from Russia. We know that Joe Biden himself held money hostage from Ukraine unless a prosecution and investigation was dropped against his son. We know all of that happened. And nothing is being done about it. And so it brings me back to, is there a crime? Maybe. Is anything going to happen? Probably not. And that's really, really unfortunate. The only way that anything can happen is if Donald Trump stays our president after November and after January.
Well, you said nothing's being done. What could be done with all of those things that you just mentioned?
Well, I think that the Senate needs to continue its investigations, right, and needs to get the rest of this information out there. I think that DNI Radcliffe has done a phenomenal job with getting out what he can get out. But there are other people in the government. We have, you know, not to sound conspiracy theorist, but there is a deep state there. There are people working against our president and working against getting this information out there that are still seeking for it to be withheld. It's even being withheld from the Senate. It's being withheld from people in the DOJ that are trying to do their job. We know this from the Senate report that I was just referencing before. They mentioned in there that the only way that they knew about some of these documents was through FOIAs that we actually litigated for John Solomon. That's cited in their report. That's crazy to think that the Senate is asking for documents and they can't even get them.
Yeah, it is.
And so, you know, what can be done? They can continue to pursue these investigations. They take a long time. You have to get it in front of a grand jury. You have to get them indicted. It's a process that has to be undertaken. And I don't pretend to be a criminal lawyer. I'm not. I'm a civil litigator. But something does need to be done, if anything, just to let the public know what actually happened.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things that was also revealed within those Brennan handwritten notes is that within that room, he was briefing not only Obama, but also likely James Comey. It's abbreviated JC. Mm-hmm. And potentially Biden was in there, although he wasn't necessarily mentioned. But you've got Obama, James Comey, and Biden. These guys are all attorneys, all three of them. If they're being briefed about a scam that Hillary is looking at perpetrating on the American people, and then they launch these investigations, I mean, well, first of all, what should they as lawyers have done when they heard about this? I mean, is there anything that legally that they should have been doing?
Well, they have an ethical obligation to report any crimes that they know about. But unfortunately here, they, at least to some extent, were the ones that were committing these crimes or enabling them, allowing them to happen. Now, interestingly, President Obama has given up his law license, as has his wife, as do many public officials. Once they are elected, again, it goes back to Bill Clinton having to surrender his law license and going through that. They either just let them lapse or they voluntarily give them up so that they can't be held to those ethical standards. But some of them have not. And a number of the attorneys that were involved in the email server investigation and that were involved in the Russia hoax have since given up their bar license. It's quite telling to see who knows they did something wrong when you just look up if whether they're barred anymore or not. To me, that's just a complete red flag. But, you know, and fortunately here at SLF, we're working to hold them accountable in many ways such as that.
Well, they definitely need to be held accountable. All right, let's go and take a break there. FOIA.
You're listening to a best of I Spy.
You're listening to Best of I Spy. This is from October 2020. I'd like to welcome now the great investigative journalist, John Solomon. He is CEO and editor-in-chief of Just the News, which is just about the top news site out there, in our opinion. John, it's great to talk to you.
It is good to be back with you. How's it going?
Oh, it's going great. Boy, there has been a lot of big and fast-moving news this week. Trump ordered a total declassification of the entire Russia hoax and Hillary email scandal. And on top of that, the huge declassification of former CIA Director John Brennan's handwritten notes in which he personally briefed President Obama and James Comey and others that Hillary had approved the plan to manufacture the Russia collusion scandal in an attempt to shift the focus away from her own scandals, her email, the DNC hacking, and her own involvement with the Russians. So let's pull that apart. Trump's order fully authorizing the declassification of everything in the Russia and Hillary email investigations, no redactions. Last year, he had given AG Barr the authority to declassify Russia probe documents, so I guess we'll believe it when we see it. Kim Herman, though, who was just on with us, had just told us about it, and you had mentioned it on Lou Dobbs, the nearly fully redacted email that you got back from your FOIA request, which came the day after Trump had said unredact everything. Why were you after that particular email?
Well, listen, it's one of the emails that's mentioned in the Mueller report in a footnote, and it involves a very important time when the investigation is pivoting away from the FBI, because James Comey's been fired, and toward the special counsel, Robert Mueller. And so there's a lot of question, because we now know, by the time they were turning the case over to Robert Mueller, there was no evidence of wrongdoing. They had determined Flynn wasn't involved in wrongdoing. They had determined there was no evidence of collusion. They had they had determined that Steele's dossier was complete garbage, and in some cases, Russian disinformation. So what was going on to create the aura that they needed a special counsel in the absence of any evidence of criminal wrongdoing? And so one of the things that occurs is there's a big leak. And the leak is that President Trump, in a meeting with Russian leaders at the White House in May 2017, boasted to the to the Russians that he had just fired James Comey and that he was a quote unquote nut job. And that comes, you know, from what's supposed to be a very confidential conversation between the president and world leaders. And that leak occurs. And before that leak occurs, there's this email that is sent that Mueller goes out of his way to mention in the report as a precursor to the leak. Now, it doesn't mean the people who wrote the email leaked it. It means that, but maybe some of the information in that email became relevant to the leak. So the Freedom of Information Act request was put in by the Southeastern Legal Foundation, and it comes back, and all but three words are blacked out, and it's delivered the day after the president said, all documents released, no redactions. And what it reminds everybody is, and we don't know whether the document's important because we can't read it, the president gives a very clear order and the bureaucrats beneath him don't carry it out in compliance with the order. And that's what's been going on for 4 years in this presidency. An independent bureaucracy that doesn't answer to the president, even though the Constitution says it does.
Yeah, absolutely shocking, really, that that's been going on. You also said on Lou Dobbs that you could show President Trump the top 40 documents that would change the Russian narrative forever. What are some of those, and what are some of the biggest things that you've just been waiting to have unredacted?
It's so funny because this morning I wrote the story with the 40 documents. The headline on Just the News is the 40 key Russia documents President Trump was still declassified. So let me give you some of the most important ones. One of them is something that's been declassified for some time, and it's been sitting in the ODNI waiting for Bill Barr, the Attorney General, to sign off. I think there's a good reason for the delay. Some of the information may involve ongoing criminal investigations, but there is a list of records showing everyone that the Obama administration unmasked during the election year that was related to either the Trump campaign, the Trump transition, or the Trump family, the Trump business. So, we know that there were 58 unmaskings just of Mike Flynn in the last 2 months before Barack Obama left office. But you must assume that he's not the only one they were listening in on.
Sure.
And so these documents have been prepared, but they've been sitting there. The American people ought to know who was unmasked and why and by whom before they go to the polls on November 3rd. And so that's a very important one. We now know who Steele's subsource was. We know he was a suspected Russian spy, or certainly had intelligence ties to the Russian intelligence community. The FBI interviewed him. We'd like to see what he actually told the FBI. We know from some declassified footnotes he disowned what Steele claimed he had said in the dossier. But we ought to know directly from the man. What did he say? And we also know that the FBI suspected him as having Russian intelligence ties all the way back to 2011. We ought to know what the FBI knew about this guy and why they ever let a Christopher Steele dossier with this man's information in it get to the FISA court. So those are just some of the examples. There's many other ones on the list. Some are obscure. Some are very explosive. Right? We ought to know. There's a classified appendix that goes to the DOJ Inspector General's report on the Hillary Clinton email case called Mid-Year Exam. Senator Charles Grassley has seen it. It said it has explosive, extraordinary information that shows the FBI didn't do its job on one very important part. He's been trying to get this declassified for 2+ years. So that's on the list. That's an important one. And we go through, there's some stuff from Uranium One. We can go all the way through. There's plenty of them. We could spend a whole hour going through them. But there are lots of documents that I think when in total are released, you really see how the dirty trick was conceived, executed, and then facilitated by the CIA, the FBI, and the intelligence community. And I think that's the goal here is we now know it was a dirty trick. We now know the FBI and CIA knew it was a dirty trick. What we need to know is who helped carry it out from inception to completion. And I think these documents would allow the American public to see the complete narrative.
It is time for break. We'll be back with more with John Solomon after this.
You're listening to Best of I Spy. This is from October 2020.
We're talking with the John Solomon about the breaking news this week around the Russia collusion hoax, John Brennan's notes, and Trump's order to declassify everything. Thanks to Brennan's notes, we know the idea came from one of Hillary's foreign policy advisors. The timing of the events, though, is very intriguing. July 26, which is when she hatched this, July 26th is also the same day that Alexander Downer gave a tip to the U.S. Embassy in London that George Papadopoulos had suggested the Trump team had received some kind of suggestion that Russia might release information damaging to the Clinton campaign. Because London is 5 hours ahead of East Coast time, the Downer tip-off almost certainly preceded Hillary's decision. So could it be that the Downer tip-off to the U.S. Embassy, they then immediately alerted Clinton's foreign policy advisor who took it to Hillary, and that's why they hatched this plan, accuse your enemy of that of which you yourself are guilty? Is there evidence of contact between the U.S. Embassy and someone inside the Hillary campaign on July 26th?
Well, that's funny. That's one of the documents that I identify in the 40. We need to know what went on between Alexander Downer, the State Department, and the FBI all throughout from May, when he allegedly has the conversation with Papadopoulos, through the end of July, when his report to the State Department becomes the predicate for the FBI to open up Crossfire Hurricane. But let's unpack the timetable a little bit, because it's actually more intriguing than most people know. July 26th is the day that Brennan briefs President Obama about the Hillary Clinton plan to concoct the Russia collusion story and stick it on Trump as a way of distracting from her email. But the process actually begins 3 weeks later, earlier, 3 weeks earlier. So July 5th, 2020, the very day that James Comey announces that he's not going to allow criminal charges to be filed against Hillary Clinton, even though she was negligent in the handling of her emails. That very same day, Christopher Steele walks into the FBI with the first of his dossiers and goes, ta-da, I have all this dirt. That's not an accident.
Yeah.
That same week, that first week of July, is when the intelligence community first intercepts the Russians saying, we've intercepted Hillary Clinton talking, or someone confirming that Hillary Clinton has ordered this dirty trick. So the dirty trick starts with Steele coming into the FBI. The Russians pick up on it. The U.S. intelligence knows the Russians know about it, right? By mid-July, according to the footnotes in the Horowitz Inspector General report, we know that the CIA is already telling the FBI Russians are feeding Christopher Steele this information. Russians are feeding. So they now know the Russians are participating in the dirty trick that Hillary Clinton has started. On July 26th, two things happen, right? Downer, a $25 million donor to the Clinton Foundation. He helped arrange $25 million of Australian tax dollars to go to the Clinton Foundation 2 decades earlier. So he's a Clinton acolyte, someone who loves the Clintons.
Yep.
He walks in and belatedly reports his conversation from 3 months earlier with George Papadopoulos. And John Brennan walks in to the president of the United States, Obama, and says, hey, this intelligence we got 3 weeks ago, it's important enough to tell you about it. It looks like they're trying to vilify, that's the word he uses. Mm-hmm. Hillary has a plot to vilify Donald Trump and try to pretend that he has a Russia collusion problem. And then another month evolves and they start bringing in Steele. They start expanding to people like Flynn and Manafort. The CIA is so concerned that this dirty trick is still being carried out and Russia may be assisting it. They then make a referral. This is unheard of. The CIA doesn't do this very often. They refer to the FBI, to James Comey directly and Peter Strzok, the lead agent. Hey, guys, we think there's a dirty trick going on here. You should be aware of it if you're dealing with any of these people. And despite that warning, the FBI continues to go get the FISA warrant, allow this investigation to go, even though the CIA has pinned red siren alarms that this is a dirty trick and we should all be careful with it. So that's the timetable that makes it so jaw-dropping. It's a willful, knowing effort by the FBI to participate in the Hillary Clinton dirty trick.
Yeah, absolutely. I find the timing of this very interesting, especially how quickly the Russians seem to get wind of everything. She hatches the plan on the 26th. 2 days later, Brennan is in the White House telling Obama about it. I mean, that would almost... And the fact that the Russians knew that she was doing this. I mean, how did the Russians find out that Hillary herself had authorized that so quickly?
Well, they sit on phones, right? They have two things, right? They have their spies, so they have human intelligence, and they do lots of electronic intelligence. Anyone who watched the TV show The Americans, which is very authentic, the Russians are very good at human intelligence, particularly in America. They have their illegals on the ground here, and so they're able to find these things out. Now, there are many theories. Maybe one of Christopher Steele's subsources was a Russian asset, and so once Christopher Steele tells them what he's up to and what he needs, they tell the Russians. Maybe there's an intercepted phone call. Maybe one of Hillary Clinton's foreign policy advisors is talking to someone, doesn't know, unwittingly, and doesn't know that they're a Russian spy. And that's how the Russians get to it. But somehow the Russians learned about it right away, and they start feeding disinformation to Steele to dirty up Trump. Why is that so important from another perspective? Remember what we've been told since January of 2017, time and time again. John Brennan, the James Comey, the outgoing Obama intelligence community, Russia's intent in meddling in the election was to hurt Hillary Clinton and help Donald Trump. That sounds great until you find out that when they made that conclusion, they knew Russia was feeding dirt to Hillary Clinton to dirty up Donald Trump. If you're dirtying up Donald Trump, it cuts against everything the intelligence community told us to believe. And that's why that intelligence community assessment is being looked at so carefully by John Durham, why John Brennan was put on the box for 8 hours and interrogated a month or two ago, because that intelligence community assessment does not appear to be accurate. It appears to have been cherry-picked and to ignore evidence that the Russians were also helping Hillary Clinton hurt Donald Trump. That is something that I think when this is all done, when we find out what it is that John Durham found, I think the big story will be the intelligence community assessment that Barack Obama rushed out the door was flawed and most likely inaccurate, ignored compelling evidence to the contrary to its conclusions.
Hmm. Okay, so
in other words, another dirty trick. Yeah. It's another part of the dirty trick.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we'll take a break there. Be right back with more John Solomon. You're listening to Best of I Spy. This is from October 2020. Back in our final segment now with John Solomon, an award-winning journalist and CEO of Just the News, pretty much the top news site out there, and that includes shaming the New York Times and Washington Post, which have done their best to look the other way on the biggest disinformation campaign in all of history. No surprise there, really, because remember, disinformation does not work unless it has the aid and comfort of the major news media. So I think if nothing else, the revelations from the Brennan notes completely shatters the whole Russia collusion hoax. 3 days before the FBI opened their investigation into Trump, Brennan is in there briefing Obama and James Comey that Hillary Clinton had already launched a plan to vilify Donald Trump by claiming he was working with the Russians. So if you, as the head of the FBI, hear that Hillary is launching a disinformation campaign, wouldn't the normal response to be investigate her, not candidate Trump?
Well, here's another thing that the normal response should be. Whenever you see a potential foreign intrusion on the election,
yes.
Remember, Christopher Steele is a foreign intrusion
That's
on our
right.
election.
Mm-hmm.
He's a British citizen taking Russian disinformation and disseminating it to the FBI in an effort to influence the U.S. election, and also to the American media and to other political leaders. The right thing for the FBI to do would have been to do a defensive briefing with President Trump and say, hey, listen, this is going on. You should be aware of it. Just the opposite. They keep them in the dark and they facilitate it. And that's why one of the 40 documents that I recommend in my story today is all records of defensive briefings given to Clinton or Trump. Here's what I think you're going to find out. Hillary Clinton got defensive briefings about foreign intrusions that might be affecting her election, and Donald Trump wasn't being given them. And that, again, shows how the intelligence community might have been picking winners and losers in our election. And so the right thing for the community, the three things they should have done, right? They should have thrown Christopher Steele out the door because it was obvious what he was doing was a political dirty trick unrelated to a counterintelligence threat. They should have advised the president about the potential threat against his campaign after they intercepted the Russians. They might have wanted to admonish Hillary Clinton that we know about this, and if you keep it up, you risk criminal jeopardy. None of those things happened. They stood silent and facilitated the dirty trick, not until Election Day, but for 2.5 years into
yes.
the Trump presidency.
Yes, yeah, and opening the Mueller report and all of it. But aside from the briefings that should have happened, I think Brennan's notes also shatter the idea that the Russians wanted Trump to win because Brennan's intel came from the Russians. If they knew what Hillary was doing and they wanted Trump to win, wouldn't the Russians then have warned Trump?
Exactly. Listen, you're exactly right. It disproves, it shows the folly of the Russia collusion theory from top to bottom. It was manufactured. It was fake. It was never real. One of the most important voices that doesn't get much attention is Barack Obama's former CIA station chief in Moscow, a guy named Daniel Hoffman. He is America's preeminent Russian spy tradecraft expert. He knows how the Russians do their deed. And for more than 2 years, going back to 2018, he has repeatedly wrote columns, gone public. I put him on my podcast. He wrote a column for me at The Hill when I worked there. And he keeps saying the Brennan ICA, the intelligence community, said, got it wrong. There is no chance that that Vladimir Putin was trying to help Trump win the election or Hillary Clinton win the election. The playbook of the Russians is to hurt both candidates and sow discord and try to destroy America's constitutional Republican democracy by sowing distrust. The playbook is intentional. And many of the things that the FBI pats itself on the back, said, oh, we discovered this. He says it was intended to be discovered. They're called discoverable influence operations. The Russians know you're listening. They put something into the system to confuse you because at the end of the day, they want Democrats and Republicans fighting with each other, destroying America, and Russia is stronger. And if the man who was Barack Obama's CIA station chief, who's America's preeminent Russia spy tradecraft expert, says this, and no one has looked at it until John Durham began, you know why we have a problem. People have the Democratic media, the Democratic Party, the institutions of the intelligence community have turned a willful blind eye to something that's quite obvious. And people ought to listen to Dan Hoffman. I think he's going to turn out to be 100% right.
Hmm. Well, Marxists and leftists are constantly out there. That's how they operate, is stirring up division. The Durham investigation, it's alleged that he is using a grand jury to investigate the Alpha Bank scandal, which Hillary had said just days before the election that the Russians were using that bank to secretly send messages to candidate Trump. Are you able to confirm whether Durham has, in fact, a grand jury looking at that?
I've seen evidence of a grand jury for several months now. I think I first said it in late July, early August. That isn't the only element where they're looking at it. But for the first time, we have some defense lawyers in public on the record in the New Yorker magazine saying their clients have gotten some form of a grand jury subpoena and they're fighting it. That tells you exactly what I've been saying for about 2-3 months. There is some grand jury activity going on. A lot of things are voluntary, done outside the grand jury, like the Brennan interview. But there are I have seen evidence of a grand jury and grand jury-like activity maybe for 3 to 4 months now. And, the only way you can see it is the defense lawyers are allowed to acknowledge it, prosecutors aren't. John Durham hasn't leaked one bit in the time that he's been running this investigation. He's been an honest broker conducting an honest investigation. Everybody's frustrated that he hasn't filed charges yet, right? I get that.
Yes.
He has filed one charge. We have one guilty plea. That was a major success, a simple one. A first-year law student could have brought that one, but he got it done. What's going on behind the scenes when you read the New Yorker article is there's a lot of efforts to fight him in the courts, to stop him from succeeding in the courts, and it slowed down the investigation. But no one should doubt the will of the Attorney General Bill Barr or John Durham. They are running a real investigation. I believe they'll call the shots as the evidence warrants. It didn't make the election timetable that those of us in politics wanted to see. But, you know, at the end of the day, you don't want a justice system that's thinking about politics. You want a justice system thinking about what's the right thing under the law and the rule of order, rule of law and order to do. And I think that's what Durham and Barr are, as frustrating it is. And listen, it's a travesty that we're going to head into 2020 and vote on the 2020 presidential election without knowing exactly what happened in the 2016. But I think the blame for that isn't on the Attorney General or on John Durham, certainly not from my reporting. It's on these bureaucrats who were involved in it, on these opposition researchers and all these dirty tricksters who, just like they did at the beginning to create the false story, they're now trying to stop the unraveling of the false story using every resource they have, including the courts. And that is why it's probably going to be after the election before we learn. But I do believe that John Durham and Bill Barr will be able to give us a complete picture sometime before the end of the year if everything goes well.
Boy, I sure hope so. And if anyone ever doubted that this was a coup, I think we are seeing clear evidence that it absolutely was. John Salomon, well, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
We hope you've enjoyed our mashup of Russia collusion hoax previous shows from 2020. We said back then that the people who did this need to be held accountable. Until that happens, the danger lies that this will all just happen again. The definition of treason is giving aid and comfort to our enemies. That is what Obama and Biden and Hillary and the spy agencies were all conspiring to do, paint Trump with treason by claiming he was giving aid and comfort to Russia to sabotage and to steal our elections. And what's the penalty for treason? No one, no president, no intelligence agency, should ever be using the power of government to sabotage their political opponents. This ought to be uniting everyone to stop it from ever happening again. Be on the lookout for changes in the media. Whether it's to cover their own butts or whether it's genuine, be on the lookout for them suddenly shifting, admitting they got it wrong, that they were lied to, and maybe people do need to be held accountable after all. That will be the tell. Let's hope that happens, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.